Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's go. You rolling with Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Welcome to Hump Day. May 22nd, and we're coming off of what a night it was. Matter of fact, and I'm paid to do this to come up with words and say them to you all as listeners, but I'm still struggling. I'm still struggling with what we saw in two separate ways. Number one, from Fade Brad. The segment that is sweeping America, the betting segment, continues to amaze. Brad Carson goes 0 for 2 last night. Really 0 for 1, but with a nice little sweet bonus pick we added there on the prop bet yesterday. Brad was going over on the Jason Tatum 3.5 three-pointers made. That goes under, as Fade Brad is intended to do.
I'll have to find some goose sound effects.
And then, of course, he had Celtics minus 10.5. That got down to minus 10 by the time game tipped off. But we know what happened there, too. Celtics didn't cover. So Fade Brad just continues to amaze. I can't wait to get to how, you know, the clip now that our Fade Brad bettors are hitting at. It continues to amaze. And then, you know, the other thing, again, I'm just befuddled by is how the Pacers blew that game.
Oh, it's disgusting. I actually felt so bad for them, but then I thought about how they executed, and I didn't feel bad for them, Jason.
That's Brad Carson, our executive producer and America Square.
Glad to be here with you, by the way, fun night of
glad
NBA.
Glad to be here with you.
Freaking wild game.
I feel like now you are cemented to where we almost, every time we introduce you, it needs to have America Square in the title after. You're fantastic executive producer, program director extraordinaire, and America's Square. You continue to amaze.
Your branding around this is also on point. You called me the Golden Goose, so see if I can find a little goose sound effect.
That's what you were doing last night.
You've branded this thing so well. I don't know if I'm going to be able to live up
to
this.
Well, it's not just. I think John too has to be credited here. John will be back
John
with us in a couple of weeks.
John did a great job setting this up.
No question. He sniffed it out.
Yeah, he found something.
We had a weakness, and that was how bad Brad is.
Scab, basically. It was a scab sitting there, and we
turned
it
into a strength.
Yep.
And now I would tell you that our edge in Fade Brad, show me the sharps who are doing better. And guess what? They're putting in a lot of work for their number.
Yeah.
How much work does Brad put in?
Barely any. Very little.
So it's amazing what's happening. And again, it just underlines, you know, it's a nice little exercise in what Brad and I like to say. You know, there are no edges, no real edges in this. We'll talk about Fade Brad. We got to talk about the way the Pacers blew it, though. 97% win probability with 10 seconds left in regulation for the Pacers, and they blew it. Obviously, in overtime, Celtics go on to win 133-128. We'll talk about the ways in which the Pacers blew it and whether or not they can recover. Headed to game two, that thing was in their hands, particularly, oh my gosh, Tyrese Haliburton, what were you doing?
Come on.
Down the stretch? What was Rick Carlisle doing, not calling the timeout on that Nembhard inbounds that gets knocked away, gives the chance to set up the Jaylen Brown three to force overtime? My goodness, again, credit to the Celtics for taking it from them, but Indiana absolutely gave it to them. We've got game one of the Western Conference Finals tonight. You can hear that game live starting at 7:30 p.m. tonight on 92.9 FM ESPN. Can't wait to see how that series unfolds and plays out. We talked about Fade Brad. We'll get to that about 12:50. He's got a pick. Hopefully, he hadn't done much research for tonight's game, and we'll see if we had a little nice little bonus like you did for us yesterday. Chandler Parsons, former Memphis Grizzlies.
Man, this is brutal.
I saw this by way of Doc Holliday, the fantastic sports director over at Channel 5. Chandler Parsons was on a podcast recently, did an interview, in which he just basically dogged out Memphis. Do you remember when this fool was apologizing over and over again to Memphis fans
yes.
for some of the stuff that he had pulled and poor decision-making of his while a Grizzly?
Mm-hmm.
We knew then it was fake.
Yep.
We knew then it was fake, and I think Chandler Parsons said how he really felt about his time in Memphis. We'll pay some attention to that, the appropriate amount. Don't want to go overboard here. Who cares kind of what Chandler Parsons thinks. But I do think if you haven't heard the audio, you'll be somewhat moved. Grizz coach Taylor Jenkins publicly acknowledged for the first time yesterday that the Grizzly staff is undergoing some changes. I think the wording he used, Brad, was a restructuring process. But clearly now we've got some acknowledgement by the Grizzlies that some things are changing with that assistant coaching staff after some back and forth about whether it was. We are 1 week out, too, Brad. You'll need to know from that deadline for Memphis Tigers swingman David Jones to make his decision. That's next Wednesday, I think 10:59 mm-hmm. or something like that. Next Wednesday he's got to make that decision by. I'm hoping and suspecting there's no reason to take it up to deadline, but obviously you've still got workouts with teams. Maybe still some interviews, clearly. We'll see what David Jones decides, but we're a week out from that decision. And everybody can calm down for now about Graceland, right?
Uh-huh.
Brad and I don't think we'll be putting in a bid anytime soon in the auction. A Shelby County judge this morning issued an injunction halting the sale of the Graceland estate, which was somehow set for a foreclosure auction Thursday. Brad and I talked about how fraudulent that all seemed in terms of the claim.
Seems unbelievable.
Against the estate and everything else. But before we get to all that, we'll set up the show 11:30 or so. We'll talk to CA columnist Mark Giannotto. Lots to get to with him, including a story he's got up at CommerceBill.com right now about the findings of a Collierville Schools investigation. We had talked about this alleged racism out at a middle school track meet. They've reported their findings. Mark Giannotto has written that story. We'll talk to him about what they found, what they didn't find out there, because what they did find was that at least, you know, one of the track officials, at least according to his side of the story, one of his allegations was unfounded. The allegation against the athletic director making a charge at his wife, who was also an official. There was no video of that. In fact, the video was of the athletic director with his arms folded across his chest. So at least that one allegation was proven unfounded. That said, I still think there's a lot to talk about there, and we'll do it with Mark Giannotto about 11:30. And, of course, ask him about Taylor Jenkins, coaching changes, assistant coaching changes, hot seat or not. Heard some back and forth on that. We've certainly discussed it here as well. At noon, we'll do the rundown like we always do. Around 12:45, 12:50, we'll do that Fade Brad Carson segment that is absolutely on fire. Brad Carson has lost his last five versus the spread. He is on an absolute heater. Yes, when Brad Carson is losing, that means our listeners are winning. We are very proud of that segment. Mm-hmm. Brad, and I just want to know.
Yes.
I want you to know.
Yep.
We are very proud of you, because I was concerned when you were on that hot streak of real hot streaks,
yep.
winning 7 of 10, would the segment die? You've shown us that, no, you've dug deep here.
Yeah, yeah.
You've dug deep here
yep.
and delivered us five straight losses against the spread, and which we don't include in the record, the bonus last night of the prop on Jason Tatum. Thank you, Brad.
Well, and the thing I will say is that it's limited focus now. Remember, we're picking like a lot of games on Friday. Now we're down to one game
a
night.
One game a night that you have.
So I can really lock
you
in
pull
on
up
the
that
loser.
ESPN page and the injury report.
Very limited prep.
Home and away.
Very limited
but
prep.
But you lock in on it.
Yep, and last night I thought was a hell of an effort by me to lose that game because who would have thought?
Well, right? It should have gone the complete other way where the Pacers were winning going away.
It really should have.
You know, again, Brad had a Celtics minus 10.5.
And it's still cutting.
And a lot of times you've been the kiss of death, and it should have been that. The real kiss of death for the Celtics. Again, we'll get to that last thing. 125, obviously, we'll have Norton Hurd the fourth. And we need to talk about what Team Thad is doing on the EYBL second circuit. 8-2. Mm-hmm. Second best record on the EYBL circuit. Brad, we've got one more regular season stop coming off a 4-0 weekend in Indy. That's all we do. We just handle business.
Just winning.
Get winning. Got to be one of the top teams to advance the Peach Jam in July. We'll talk about where Coach Hurd and Team Thad are right now. Things setting up good for Team Thad to advance the Peach Jam. Hopefully going to be that first Memphis area AAU program to win a Peach Jam. It's all lining up right now. So lots to get to, including, again, Fade Brad. Again, people are sending me their betting slips now, Brad. They've got so much confidence in you. They're parlaying these. Against our advice, they're parlaying your picks.
Don't do that.
We'll get to it. 12:50, guys.
We've got a bonus teaser tonight too.
And I didn't want to force you. I didn't want to force it on you.
You can see on the paper there's
a circle and there's
a note here.
If you were going to give us another bonus pick.
Yeah, and this is all based around FanDuel. Very limited research. Haven't even looked at the webpage yet.
We trust you. Based on your record this year, we trust that you haven't done much research. He is the best at it, y'all. And again, the way we have flipped this is nothing short of amazing.
Found something.
Yeah. Do not underestimate the power of Fade Brad. Lots to get to, like we said. We must talk about, because I don't think it can be overstated how boneheaded,
awful
Indiana was in blowing that game at the end of regulation. And I cannot get over, Brad, how it felt like Rick Carlisle, a seasoned veteran as
a
coach.
Yes, we usually give him the benefit of the doubt.
Stood by and watched it.
Yeah.
Knowing that he's got, at least for this, you know, for this stage, an inexperienced team.
Yes.
And certainly an inexperienced point guard at this stage in Tyrese Haliburton.
And you have J.J. Redick calling the game talking about the foul before the three thing right before the play.
And we're going to talk about that.
Yep.
I want to point out, though, before we get into it.
Yes.
Because I didn't hear this morning, and I haven't heard it anywhere. It is not lost on me how at the end of Game 7, Knicks Pacers. I'm taking you back to after that game. Tyrese Haliburton goes to the podium. He's got a hoodie on. It's got the Reggie Miller choke image on it from the 1994, I think it was Game 5, or where Eastern Conference Finals. You're smelling what I'm putting down here. Eastern Conference Finals. It was paying homage to Reggie when he said Knicks choke job.
That meme went all over.
Listen, here's the thing too. He didn't wear it into the building. He decided to wear it after they beat the Knicks in Game 7. And that is his prerogative, but it was pointed out how he didn't have that thing coming in there.
Ooh.
And so what I would tell you is while you're trolling the Knicks there afterwards, you got to understand here, and Smoove tells you all the time,
you're on this.
Sports karma is real.
Yes.
Because Tyrese Haliburton choked down the stretch of this game. He absolutely did. And it will come back around on you. And it certainly did last night for Tyrese Haliburton. Nuts and bolts, Tatum 36. The 10 in overtime were the key.
Yep.
Because, again, if Celtics lose that game, Jason Tatum is hearing that same old narrative about not stepping up, even with 26 points. Because down the stretch, again, of regulation, he was absent for the most part. He better be thanking his lucky stars for Jaylen Brown. That said, 10 in overtime, he had the big three-point play through physical contact. That's what I love to see with Jason Tatum, rather than just standing outside shooting threes all day long. Use that big old body, and he did finally in overtime. But Jaylen Brown, certainly the hero. Three-pointer comes with 6.1 seconds remaining in regulation after Indiana has turned it over off the inbounds. What's Nembhard doing throwing the ball in? That should be T.J. McConnell. And then what, as Rick Carlisle admitted afterwards, are you doing with a timeout in your hand and not calling it right there? Instead, Pascal Siakam tries to make a run towards the baseline. Wrong place you want to go because it's headed towards the corner. Nembhard throws the pass. Jaylen Brown, playing some hustle defense, gets it, you know, basically where his hand causes a deflection off Pascal's, you know, hand. We can go back of whether or not it was off of him, but Pascal tried to chase it down and knocks it out of bounds. The ball goes over, sets up the final play for Jaylen Brown, which, again, there's some controversy there, which even the king, LeBron James, weighed in on last night on Twitter,
Told y'all all the time, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it up, I don't need it up.
Yep.
Told y'all all the time, this is why you foul when you're up three. You don't give them the chance to get the three-pointer off. Two things about that play. Really, really comes down to one thing. There should have been a switch, okay? If there's a switch involved, and what happens there is Derek White comes over, sets a pick, okay? Pascal Siakam is on Jaylen Brown. Most teams there, and if you hear Jay Williams and all the analysts say that, most teams there are going to switch.
Yep.
Clearly,
the corner.
Clearly, though, Rick Carlisle, and I'll tell you why this is important. Clearly, though, Rick Carlisle had them on fight through screens modes rather than switch modes, rather than code red or whatever it is. That must have, because even at the bottom of the screen, you've got Nimhard trying to fight through his screen rather than switching. So my point is the entire team was doing it. Bottom line is because they didn't switch, because after the Derek White screen, McConnell fights through, Pascal fights through, he's behind Jaylen Brown, Pascal, because they didn't switch. By the time he gets over to him, Jaylen Brown, as we saw in the corner, is already faced up.
Yep.
In fact, he's pump faking to see if he can get Pascal to foul him, whatever, shoot the three, whatever. But the point is, back to what LeBron is saying, because Pascal was behind,
right,
because they did not switch that play, and again, we can go back and forth whether Carlisle had it called or not, looked like the entire team wasn't switching,
yep,
but clearly right there, they did not. Pascal Siakam gets behind on the play, allows Jaylen Brown to face up. It's too late to foul.
Too late.
Now, some may say, well, I'm going to foul him anyway because I think the pressure of making three free throws is tough. But the point of fouling when you're up three is to give them two free throws. They weren't in a position to do that. But again, that goes back to what were you doing? Either Pascal and TJ should have switched or you should have had it called where everyone was switching. And so that sets up the final play. But at that point, and Rick Carlisle says it, because Pascal was late getting there, him deciding not to foul, not to touch Jaylen Brown, really, frankly, doesn't even get a hand up, was forgivable because he's already late there and you're going to end up fouling him on the shot.
It was actually a decent contest even after the fight throw.
I mean, a decent contest in the fact that he got his body close to him.
He was close. But
I will say, Brad, he never got a hand up.
No, he didn't.
He never got a hand up.
And Jalen rose up.
And he was worried about fouling him and giving him the three free throws.
After
again,
he was
the
shooting.
The rule is trying to get
absolutely.
You. You want him to shoot two free throws, foul him before the shot goes up. They would have been able to do that if they had switched. Now, Carlisle talked about that. That was the plan to foul, but because they were late on the switch, it didn't work. Going back, rewinding, that play never should have happened because, again, you've got a 97% probability chance of winning when you were inbounding that ball up three. And Nimhard throws it away, and here's the deal. Had a timeout in your pocket. That goes back to me, to Rick Carlisle again. You know, we talked about it's so crazy how we talked about Pascal Siakam. We talked about it with Nick Friedell yesterday. You and I have talked about it. Like the difference maker he is for the Pacers because of the experience he brings to the table as a champion. But as a dude, did you watch him last night, top of the key like we talked about in that 15 to 17 foot range? He's knocking them down left and right. They're killing the Celtics defense. But back to the point, his experience has really helped them. Last night in that situation where you've got the inbounds play, you're hoping that the experience of a Rick Carlisle, who's been through these playoff games, right, and can help an inexperienced team, Nimhard, Halliburton, those guys, that's where you're expecting his experience to shine through. Call the timeout. What are you doing? Again, you've already seen your point guard in Halliburton turn it over earlier beforehand. Again, two key turnovers there late, one on Halliburton, one on Nimhard, but particularly with the second, it should have been prevented with a timeout. And so now you're left with trying to pick up the pieces in a game that you, frankly, down the stretch controlled and should have won. Now, here's the deal. The Pacers let a couple get away from them against New York, bounce back. Oh, headline here. Newsflash, this ain't the New York Knicks, okay, that you're trying to come back from. That was your game. You had stolen home court, and you gave it back. And part of it, Brad, to go back to the Halliburton point about, you know, how he really choked down the stretch, and they had a few seconds, 5 seconds, to get it down after the Jaylen Brown shot. Halliburton didn't even get off the shot, didn't get to the basket, whatever else. He's trying to shoot a three. But I was so reminded of this watching them. They love their 100-mile-per-hour pace, best offense in the league. They're going up and down because they're flying at you. That's the way the Pacers play. It's one of the reasons why they're here. And there are times last night, as that game and the time's dwindling down, like the Halliburton, I will say, that whip pass to Pascal Siakam gave him the dunk. We're going 100 miles per hour. It's great, and it's working. But last night, Halliburton didn't know it was time to slow down. You guys have got control of this thing now. Stop it and wait on him to foul you, right? That 100-mile-per-hour pace, it still felt like he's playing at it. At the end of that game, you guys are in control at that point. Again, I'd go back to, where's your head coach to talk about that with your inexperienced point guard? Again, inexperienced at the sense that he's at this level now, an Eastern Conference final. You got to calm him down. He was so out of character by the end of that game, really spoiled, again, a really great performance from Pascal Siakam, pretty solid performance in terms of shooting the three. You were already at a major deficit in terms of free throw shooting. They finished with 10 free throws attempted to the Celtics' 30, but I think at one point that was three or four going into overtime. I mean, most of the free throws that Indiana did get came late in overtime. There was a huge discrepancy in terms of free throws attempted in Boston, getting the whistle and everything else. And yet with that, all that said, you still not just had the opportunity, yep, it was done. The game should have been over. And so, again, I can go back to sports karma here and point to Halliburton, you know, trolling the Knicks with the Reggie choke job. You're doing it yourself. But more importantly, it probably, and I will give Rick Carlisle some credit on this, because he said this is on me. You know, because you're so worried about this young team outside of Pascal Siakam and its confidence level in a position like this, and you've dropped that game that you had, it's the right thing to do for a veteran coach. And look, he made the right calls. I have to go back to it because I wondered if he was doing it at the time. After game two, when he sent the foul, we talked about this, when he sent the foul calls up to the league, you know, to try to get a better whistle, you could say that worked out well, right? There are things that he's absolutely done well. He let this team down last night. I give him credit for calling it out. He's trying not to hurt their confidence, whatever else, you know, shielding them. But clearly, too, I believe this is on as much on him as it is the players who were turning, the Pacers who were turning the ball over down the stretch, Nimhard, Halliburton, those guys. I mean, I would say inexcusable on the part of, just as inexcusable, Halliburton turning that ball over the way he was down the stretch was Rick Carlisle not understanding that my team's rattled here. You know, I've got a chance to steal one here, and I'm about to let it get away. Let me call my last timeout. What are you saving it for, Brett? You know, the whole philosophy of let my team play through it, that works when you've got a veteran outfit, right? Works better. We'll put it. It's not everything. There's always exceptions, whatever. But that whole I'm going to let my team figure it out, that's good for when it comes to veteran teams. LeBron's out there, coach on the floor, I've always thought, as opposed to ones that are new to this, like this Indiana Pacers team is. And so this may always be a deal where, you know, because for Boston, my gosh, and Tatum talked about it afterwards, but really Jaylen Brown did too. So you don't need to lose a game now to be your wake-up call like you did in the previous two series. This should be the wake-up call. But, you know, for them, you know, they got that. You got to talk about dodging 2-3 bullets, you know, and now, again, who knows? They may blow the Pacers out in the second game because you've got a team that already felt like it let let the chance to steal home court advantage get away. Again, I go back to Rick Carlisle. What are you doing? I'm still struggling with the way they blew that game. Ultimately, though, you have to give the Celtics credit, and I think a good place to sort of land is, yeah, Tatum finishes with 36, you know, steps up in overtime with 10 of those 36. But to me, the guy I want with the ball in his hand late is Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen him now, you know, we've seen this duo for, we've said it's 6 conference finals for Jaylen Brown, 5 for Jason Tatum. We've seen it through ups and downs, and we've seen Jason Tatum score 50s in game 7s and gone back and forth. But what we don't really go back and forth on is that, you know, Tatum is the Batman, right, to Jaylen Brown's Robin. I'm not sure it should be that way. Again, Tatum led him in points, assists, rebounds this year, I'm pretty sure. And so don't get me wrong. Statistically, yes, he's the leader. But you tell me in clutch time who you trust more. You tell me who, when he's going to the basket, right, using that big body, who takes advantage of it more, like it feels like he should. It's Jaylen Brown. And it was Jaylen Brown last night giving them new life with that shot in the corner. And so, you know, I'm sure Celtics fans would push back because, and again, I'm a huge Jason Tatum fan. You guys know that. Light-skinned LeBron, I love him to death. But the more I watch this duo work together, the more I used to think, man, Jaylen Brown can't even dribble. Dude, Jaylen Brown is the heart and soul of that thing right now. And there are times when Jason Tatum seems perfectly fine with deferring to Jaylen Brown. So, we can't elevate him to Batman because he didn't lead the team in scoring, rebounding, and assists this season. That was Jason Tatum. But I don't know that Jason Tatum's ever going to win an MVP with the Boston Celtics because Jaylen Brown does too much. You know, both in the regular season and now clearly. I mean, this stuff here follows you. And this is what Draymond Green was talking about that I think is really a plus. When he had Jason Tatum on the other night, he's asking about MVP voting and everything else. Yeah, we know that's a regular season award, but what you do in the playoffs and that narrative, that follows you into the next regular season. And so back to the point, I just look at Jaylen Brown as the guy I trust more, you know, even though Jason Tatum's supposed to be the leader. That said, Tatum, former Memphis War Eagle, steps up in overtime, scores the 10. But, brother, you wouldn't have had the chance if Jaylen Brown wasn't saving you last night. So credit to the Celtics. Door was open for them. They go through. Indiana Pacers pretty much said, come on in. We don't want this. I mean, my gosh, Rick Carlisle, what are you doing not calling time out there? And again, what are you doing not making sure your guys are switching? Maybe the reason they didn't want the switch in that case is because they didn't want T.J. McConnell switched over to a longer Jaylen Brown who's going to get that shot off against T.J. McConnell. Pascal, we need you to fight through that screen because you're the one with the length. Perhaps that's the thinking there by Carlisle. But again, because of the screen, Pascal is late. You cannot foul before Jaylen Brown is getting his shot into his shot motion. And ultimately, you have a hero in Jaylen Brown knocking down a huge shot. You knew, didn't you, Brad, once that game went to overtime as a Celtics?
It's over.
It was over.
It was over.
I knew it, too. I said, well, now Jason Tatum will step up.
That's it.
I said, now Tatum will step up now that he realizes he's got renewed life thanks to some, you know, this bungled, down-the-stretch decision-making by the Pacers and Jaylen Brown's huge shot.
I couldn't believe it, though. That rise up in the corner shot from Brown was friggin' unbelievable.
Dude, Indiana wasted not just great performances from Pascal, solid. What Halliburton ended up with 25. Miles Turner was killing.
Yeah, I mean, even
Miles Turner had 23, goes 3 or 4 from three.
T.J. McConnell had 13. Like, he looked great.
They were making Boston look like it missed Porzingis.
Yes,
in terms of what their bigs were doing to Horford. Yeah. You had it.
You had it. No, I think this is the series. I really do. And I know that sounds crazy.
Your bench outplayed Boston. Like, you checked so many boxes last night.
You needed this game.
So, again, you wonder, can an inexperienced team, you know, again, you've got Pascal's truly the leader. He's the one that's perhaps, hey, we can get through this because the rest of them don't know. You wonder, can you pick up the pieces, get your confidence back, and give another real competitive effort at Boston after blowing one like you did. Got to feel like you gave it away. And I wonder if Halliburton's rethinking that decision to wear the Reggie Miller choke job hoodie, because I tell you, sports karma is as real as it gets. We're going to talk to Mark Giannotto. We'll talk to him about the playoffs, of course, but I wanted to talk to him about the stories I got up over at commercialbill.com about the findings out at Collierville High School, internal investigation, of course, but the findings from the track meet, middle school track meet that occurred out there three, 4 weeks ago. Mark has been reporting on that story. We'll also obviously spend a great deal of time on Grizzlies, Taylor Jenkins, his comments yesterday about the assistant coaching staff, and maybe whether or not Mark thinks that Taylor Jenkins should or should not be on a hot seat or a warm seat. We'll see how he phrases it. We'll do all that when we get back. You're listening to Jason John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. We're in the thick of it in the NBA playoffs, as you know, but it's not too late to get in on the action with FanDuel, because right now new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 to use on same-game parlays, live bets, championship futures. We're having a lot of fun with Fade Brad. It's been very lucrative. There's no better place to bet all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Just go to FanDuel.com/JSmith to get started. They make it easy. Again, that's FanDuel.com/JSMITH. That's the promo code. We thank you. New customers, again, getting $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. It's only on FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. And 929 FM, ESPN, must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online, real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789.
929 FM, ESPN, Memphis' sports station, on the go, on the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app. Follow 92.9 FM ESPN. Rewind any show, any segment now. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Mark Donato's a Michigan man, an award-winning columnist and editor for The Commercial Appeal, co-host of the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show, which I hope you are listening to every day right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 2 to 4. Can follow him on X at mgiannotto. Read him at commercialappeal.com. And Mark, we don't. I won't spend the entire segment on this, but you do have some reporting up, and you had been reporting on it. The Collierville Middle School track incident from a few weeks back.
Yeah.
Collierville did its own investigation.
Yes.
And it found what?
So, officially, I guess it found that no Collierville schools employees were involved in racial or disrespectful behavior, essentially. And if you're not familiar with the details of the story, at this middle school track meet, a TSSAA track official filed a report, Ron King, filed a report alleging racist behavior over, it was the middle school track meet was going on, and there was supposed to be, there was also a lacrosse game booked, a Collierville playoff lacrosse game booked. And the track meet went long, and tensions apparently got really high, really testy, to the point, Ron King alleged, the folks taking part in the track meet felt threatened, both, you know, racially and with disrespectful behavior. So Collierville commenced with an investigation, an internal investigation, said they interviewed a lot of people and reviewed what video footage they could get, cell phone cameras, whatever they could get from that day. And so what they specifically said was, yes, no Collierville, while there was, they conceded while there was disrespectful behavior, they basically, that took place, they basically cleared all employees and student athletes as well. And some of the student athletes, some of the Collierville lacrosse players, there were accusations made by Ron King that they also threatened them, at one point threatening to throw balls at them to get them off the field. So it concluded that. It also, Ron King made a specific claim that the athletic director Jeff Curtis, had, you know, threatened his wife and, like, charged at her at one point. His wife was also an official at the event. And they said, Collierville said, as, through its investigation via video, that they have evidence that Jeff Curtis did not do that.
That did not happen.
That was an unfounded allegation. He would just stood there with his arms folded. And so, but it did not specifically, you know, like, ultimately, it conceded that there was disrespectful behavior by what it said, what Collierville concluded was by spectators, by coaches and officials affiliated with the track meet, and event volunteers, like track meet volunteer, you know, people working as volunteers, that's where kind of the disrespectful behavior occurred. Which, you know, I guess I don't know how much stock to put into it, just because it's an internal investigation. And
right.
It seemed like most of the interviews were done with Collierville folks. The TSSAA responded to the investigation and decided not to take any action
against Collierville.
I guess I would say this. I'd take my reporter hat off and give my columnist hat on. And now that I've kind of presented what is... Oh, and we should note, Collierville also in this report said that it had actually requested ahead of the track meet to have different track officials because they had had problems with this...
With this particular group
of officials, and at the state level, that request was denied ahead of the meeting.
But whether that was specifically with King or with some other official on the staff,
there's no indication
of that.
Exactly, right. That it was right. King, but I think the implication was, Yeah, yes, that's what they...
Well, certainly not had the video going against his, you know, his allegation of Jeff Curtis charging. That certainly hurts the credibility of your report.
Yeah.
That's just true.
And then they were upset that he went to the media before investigation.
You, buddy, the media.
The investigation.
That he came to me.
That he did that before there was a proper investigation done. However, it was not... Collierville asked for a written and public apology from the TSSAA. The TSSAA did not do that because they noted this. That was what he did. While they were not, they weren't thrilled about it either. Is not technically as of now against their rules. So it sounds like they're going to change that rule moving forward. But
they also acknowledged that the facility was overbooked.
Yeah, Collierville acknowledged that, and ultimately, like I think both me and you agreed, like whatever happened, you know, it's a he said, she said at this point, but it's very clear this could have been avoided with proper scheduling of the stadium or even just, and they acknowledge it's like a better approach to crowd control.
Communicate,
if you will.
Like they didn't use the PA system.
Yeah, they didn't use the PA to like inform people here's what's going on.
And this is down the tension.
Yeah, yeah, like this is, you know, we're going to start the lacrosse game. It's seven, whatever it ended up being. But I would say this. do I think Ronald King and his wife Barbara just like made this all up out of thin air?
They've been doing this for 40 years already.
Yeah, before. I do not believe that they just made up what they heard out of thin air. Mm-hmm. Do I think, because I've talked to some parents and people who were there subsequently after the original article, and like, it does sound like it was just a very, like, it was a very testy situation.
Got tense out there.
Probably unnecessarily so when you're thinking about it's like a freaking high school. Yes, it's a playoff game, but it's high school lacrosse.
Jeff Curtis has got
middle school
his track and
field. And
his track coach arguing.
Yeah.
And Collierville admitted it was a heated exchange. Yeah. No profanity, but and that helps lead to the tension. You have overbooked the place.
Yeah. And so if Collierville wants to bury its head in the sand and think like there's not something other than overbooking a stadium that probably should be addressed, like go for it. But like, I don't believe the girls' basketball coach is just making this stuff up out of thin air. And I don't think these track officials made up what they heard out of thin air. And so, you know, yeah, I guess it cleared Collierville, I don't know how much stock you,
that's the bottom line.
If they really wanted to get the bottom of this, they'd, you know, there'd be some outside, either like, to me, it's not really Collierville that it's, you're disappointed in. It's honestly, to me, it's like the TSSAA basically just very clearly to me said, we don't really want to deal with this. This is middle school track meet.
We'll keep having our events there. Everything's good.
If we don't need to deal with it, we'll take your word for it.
And we'll tell our guy, stop talking to the media first.
Yeah, yeah. Like, thanks for investigating this. We appreciate it, and we're done with this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, very clearly, as you pointed out, Ron King, if there's video evidence.
Yeah, that's the issue for him.
And at the very least embellishing a portion of the story, that does hurt his credibility. But I still personally don't think he would just make this up out of thin air. Mm-hmm. I've never met Ron King, and it wasn't like I went searching for this and heard about this. He sent it to me just out of the blue.
Clearly feeling very strongly about it.
Yeah, like I think
the public needed to see it.
Well, and I think, you know, my gut tells me, he didn't tell me this, but my gut tells me the reason you do that is because you're afraid that someone's just going to sweep this under the rug, which is, you know, probably what would have happened if he didn't send it to the media. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're still kind of doing that. Like, honestly, like they're kind of just sweeping it under the rug, saying this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
That's basically what Collierville said.
Good, great reporting on it. You can read the story over at commercialappeal.com. And of course, we're talking to Mark Giannotto of the CA, and Giannotto and Jeffrey. All right, Grizzlies. What's going on with the assistant coaching staff? I know you're going to tell me like it is. Did they flip the assistant coaching staff?
I mean,
I think the Grizzlies are holding back on.
I think when you heard Taylor Jenkins talk yesterday, Because you have to realize when you're dealing with Taylor Jenkins, especially, like, you got to cut through. When he's using buzzwords, it's usually like cover. And basically, he gave, to me, yesterday's answer to the question about his assistant coaching staff, where he's, nothing's been done yet, but we're restructuring and it's collaborative with Zach and all that mumbo jumbo. That sounded like a guy who was trying at all costs to avoid saying he fired a bunch of guys or had to fire. I think the phrase is had to fire a bunch of guys. Yes. And my gut tells me the reason they're being weird about this is they're hoping these some of these guys get jobs so they don't have to announce that they've been fired.
That's what I think. Yes.
That's why I think they're doing they're. It's been a little weird. Like, I don't think the scuttlebutt at the scouting combine that everyone was reporting that they had laid off, you know, they were changing over the staff in a more significant way than you expect. I mean, because last year they did add two assistants last year.
Yes, two.
My initial reaction to the first report of it last week was my gut told me they were, you know, the two guys they brought in last year, they'll keep, and then maybe everyone else might be on the chopping block.
But wasn't St. Andrew's offense, and you can school me if I'm wrong here, wasn't he?
Yes, he came in to help.
I realize you don't have your pieces, but they were the worst in the league.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, and Taylor conceded that yesterday.
Acknowledged that.
Like, they got to get a better half-court off. I mean, ultimately, half-court offense has been a problem for this team the entire Taylor Jenkins era. Mm-hmm. And it's always been... it's always been a weird thing, his let it fly stuff. They haven't really had the personnel to be a team that just lets it fly all the time. But I mean, Patrick St. Andrew was coaching at the scouting combine.
No, I'm with you. I would lean
Anthony
your way.
Carter was like a big get from Miami, like getting him from the Heat.
People credited him too, right? I mean, whether it was... I don't know that you can pin it to a guy, but Laravia, Vince, GG, I mean, the development there.
The way I phrased it,
Laravia late.
The way I saw it, being at games, being around the team, at games last year, during timeouts, which is when I'm paying attention, who's talking to Taylor Jenkins when they're huddling away from the players and deciding what they're going to say to the players during the timeout? There were three other people besides Taylor Jenkins most of the time when he was huddling out, at least from what I saw. It was St. Andrew, it was Anthony Carter, and it was Brad Jones, his longtime assistant. And so, again, my gut is telling me he's not getting rid of guys he just brought in a year ago.
But Brad Jones,
who was, you know, because remember, this staff lost Darko Rajakovic a year ago. Like, lost a now sitting head coach.
Right.
And to me, that's where, you know, if he's making, you know, because the other assistants, quite frankly, are going to be more than likely, I would think, or maybe St. Andrew gets demoted, but they're going to be back row assistants. Like, if you look at an NBA bench, like, back row assistants just aren't, you know, they aren't as important. And that's not to say, Vitaly Potapenko, Scoony Penn, Sonia Rahman, I'm sure they fill certain roles on that staff. I'm not saying they're useless or anything. Like, you can sense the, you know, especially, you know, like, they've praised Sonia Rahman's scouting stuff, and sure, Scoony Penn has great relationships with the players. Potapenko's been the big man coach, as, you know, people seem to like him too. Like, I'm sure they feel, but, like, ultimately, when it comes to, like, strategizing, like, those people aren't involved. Like, I didn't sense during games they were that involved in terms of, you know, and so maybe I'm drawing too many conclusions from what I see in the huddles, from the outside looking in. So to me, the only thing that really, if let's say they're keeping St. Andrew and Carter, the only role I'm interested in really truly is the Brad Jones role, because, you know, it does feel like he needs a new right-hand man. Mm. Like, Darko's gone. Brad Jones, look, like, he's a really nice guy, and he used to be Taylor's boss.
Oh, but yeah, like, they're buddy.
If that's your... But he's like the guy on the staff with extensive pro, you know, coaching experience. Like, I think you can do better than that, probably. Now, you know, what route does he go? You know, I don't know.
Does it need to be someone he knows and has a relationship with? Again, I didn't mean to get off into this, but, or like a Darvin Ham, or does it need to be somebody he has no relationship with and then can check him on things?
I think with Jenkins, you want like an, like Darko ran the offense. Like you need an offense. Like I think what's important to me is not necessarily whether he knows Taylor or not. It's someone who can, you know, help him better implement an offense, because that's what they're looking for. And like St. Andrew came in to help with that. But like, you know, I think you need like someone with some like real experience, not necessarily a former head coach, someone with extensive NBA experience. That's what's missing on the staff. And so the other stuff, like, sure, they're bringing in a player development guy, whatever. Yeah, great, great. What I'm really actually interested in when you really narrow it down is, like, who's taking – if Brad Jones is one of the guys gone, who's taking that role? Because that, to me, is – again, when I look at it, it's like the people he's actually strategizing with during games. You know, like, that's who it is. The front
–
The front bench – who's sitting in the first row with the players? Those are the assistants to me that really truly matter. That's how I look at it.
What does significant assistant coaching staff change suggest to you about the temperature of Taylor Jenkins' seat?
Well, I just think, like,
because John Hollinger says that's always the sign.
He's entering year six and hasn't gotten past the second round of the playoffs. Like, of course, like,
reality
it's
check.
The freaking NBA. Of course, everyone's on the hot.
And there's only one playoff.
Here's what I'm going to tell you right now. Look at the conference finals, okay?
Yeah.
I went and looked this up yesterday. So, Chris Finch and Jason Kidd were both on hot seat lists entering this season, okay? Joe Mazzulla, if he loses this series, the Pacers will probably get fired. So, he's on a hot seat right now. Mm-hmm. The only one who's not on a hot seat is Rick Carlisle, and he's on his fourth job. Like, he's been, you know, like, I mean, this is, like, the fact that the more notable story is that Taylor Jenkins has not been on a hot seat, and it's year six. Like, this is the first time we're really talking about it. And I don't know, like, what does hot seat mean? Like, I've been under the assumption, like, if next year they were to start, if they were fully healthy and started 6-19, I think he would get fired.
I do too.
Like, you know, like, and I think next year, if they make the playoffs and lose in the first round,
playoffs? Yeah.
If they don't win a playoff series next year, I think he's probably going to get fired. But, like, that doesn't mean he's a bad coach or anything. Like, I just think that's the coach is the first one to go. They're like they are the lead to me in terms of like getting to a championship or building a championship caliber team. Like, out of all the things the Grizzlies need, like, they're, like, the coach is the least important. I really believe, like, it's about your star players. The GM is more important than the coach. Well, like, everyone's focused on Taylor Jenkins. To me, I'm more focused on Zach Kleiman, because what we're seeing in these conference finals is these teams that are advancing are able to pull off trades. And, like, that is one thing he has not. He's been good at draft night trades, and maybe the Marcus Smart is his move that will work out a year later, kind of like Rudy Gobert did.
Well, he needs to make another one.
Even Taylor Jenkins, like, he's going to have to make a tough call on Taylor Jenkins here soon. It feels like, ultimately.
Well, it may not be tough, like you said.
Yeah,
he may do it for you.
Yes, but nonetheless, like, he's going to have to decide, and then he's going to have to go hire. You know, if that comes to that, like, hire a new coach. Like, to me, he's the one who's more important in all of this.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
Because, like, if Taylor Jenkins is the coach and they make the conference finals next year, great. If he's not, so what? Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I don't think he makes that much of a difference one way or the other. Like, I don't think he's the negative some people think he is because of his rotations, whatever. I also, like, guys like Bobby Marks and whoever are saying he should be coach of the year after this year, given that he got dragged 27 wins out of this team, didn't watch the first 25 games. They should not have been 6-19 with the personnel they had at the beginning of the year. And it's, by the way, it's been a consistent thing with him. He gets off to slow starts as a coach. It takes him a while to figure out his team. But I think he's been a pretty good coach for the Grizzlies. And, like, is he on a hot seat? Like, as in, like, I think if you're saying he's not on a hot seat, like, just because management says, like, they're happy with Taylor Jenkins, like, he is at the point, because he's entering year six, that he, and the expectations this team has, if this team is healthy and goes through the first half of this year, like, kind of dragging along, I think he's going to get fired. Like, there's too much at stake. Like, you're going to try and shake things up. And that might be another thing to pay attention to in terms of who they hire for that lead assistant, if you will, or the veteran assistant. Do they hire someone who could slot in there as an interim later on? I don't know. You know, like that'll be an interesting dynamic to examine. I mean, Darvin Ham's not just the obvious one, the one people are going to point to.
I don't know if I would want even one of them. I'm just got to keep the one because he's obvious.
It sounds like, if you listen to Lakers fans, Darvin Ham is like a similar coach to Taylor Jenkins. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of struggles with rotations sometimes. He had a different situation in L.A., but ultimately, like, you know, the players kind of gave up on him.
I can't imagine them putting in another first-time head coach, right? You would go the opposite approach. You would go somebody who's done it before.
Yeah, I think the next coach is going to, you're going to get your
guy who could bring maybe a championship in terms of
who's next year's version of Budenholzer?
Y'all recycle Vogel again. We seem to do it every
Vogel.
Every few years we recycle him.
I mean, well, you're seeing the reports that, you know, I don't know if they could get him, but, you know, Tyronn Lue would be an interesting one. You know, I don't know. I assume he'll work it out with the Clippers, but
yeah, he'd probably like to play out there,
or he'll have another opportunity. But I don't want to just bypass Taylor Jenkins. Maybe he can lead this team to the quote unquote promised land. I don't think he's been that impressive in the playoffs as a coach.
One playoff series.
But even in the Minnesota series, like that series was like, I mean, they were kind of lucky to win that series.
Outplayed for a great deal of it.
They beat them in the fourth quarter, and they did make the adjustments eventually to win the series. And then, you know, I don't think it gets talked enough about the Game 6 loss to the Lakers. Not that you lost Game 6, but to get, like, obliterated like that. Like, that was, like, I remember going, like, God, what is with this team? Like, what's going on here? And, like, that one to me hangs on Taylor Jenkins, too, because, like, how the hell does the team come out like that in your season's on the line? It's one thing to lose the game, but, like, to lose the game the way they did. But all in all, I think he's been a pretty good coach for the Grizzlies. I mean, I think if he lasts this entire season, I think he'll set the all-time franchise wins record. He'll be the winningest coach ever. I don't know.
He's one of the longest-tenured coaches in the league, believe it or not.
You know, until he does it in the playoffs, he won't move past Lionel Hollins, you know, as the best coach in franchise history. You'd probably still put Hubie ahead of him right now, even though Hubie didn't win a playoff series.
Coach of the year.
The coach of the year and just the the symbolism. Him turning the franchise, turning the corner for the first time. Now, if Jenkins can go on a run here this year, like, you know, then you can talk me into him passing Hubie. It probably takes two playoff runs to pass Lionel, I would say. Even though you'll have more quote unquote wins, but I don't know. He's one of the longest tenured coaches in the NBA now at this point. Like, this is just the business that we're in. Like, to be shocked that he's being mentioned as on the hot seat, I think naive. It's just like, this is the way it works in the NBA. Like, the fact that he's entering year six is like he's done a pretty good job. Like, that's longevity in this business. He feels like he's one bad 30-40 game stretch from getting, like, he would get fired if he had a bad 30 or 40 game stretch this year.
Think we'll ever see Penny Hardaway on an NBA sideline?
So, I thought his interview was interesting when he talked about the NBA stuff in this regard. He made mention of, like, he seemed to be open to the idea.
Paying dues.
He said paying dues. Like, so, could I see him being an NBA assistant coach? I think that's more realistic than saying he's going to go be a head coach right now. Like, I could see some team hiring him as, like, a player development guy, as a second-row assistant. Now, is Penny being genuine about he's willing to, like, do that? Because he wasn't willing to do that at the college level.
Right. I'm thinking in his mind's eye, he wins big here and goes and gets the head coaching job. Because how could you – I mean, he knows Patrick Ewing, who toiled on sidelines as assistant forever, never got the job.
Yeah.
Sam Cassell may not get the Lakers job.
Yeah.
You know, behind J.J. Redick, who has no experience whatsoever.
Yeah.
For Penny, right, the business and man that he is, to go toil on a bench – working up as just, I know he can say it, but I just,
yeah.
I'm thinking at least.